Welcome to Let's Talk Micro.
Hello, my dear audience. Welcome to another episode of Let's Talk Micro. As always, I hope you had a great week. And of course, you can always find Let's Talk Micro on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, GoodPods. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find Let's Talk Micro. As far as social media, I am on Instagram, TikTok, Blue Sky Social, and YouTube as Let's Talk Micro, on X as Let's Talk Micro 1, on LinkedIn as Luis Plaza. And I have an email address, which is letstalkmicro@outlook.com. So either via social media or via email, you can reach out with any suggestions, any feedback. They are always welcome and appreciate it. So please go ahead and subscribe to the podcast, download episodes, and if the app allows you to do so, please go ahead and leave a review. Thank you so much for the support. And as you know, the Let's Talk Micro podcast does not have any sponsors. So if you want to support the podcast in any way, you can do so via a Venmo link or via Buy Me a Coffee, KOFI, both links available on the show notes. As you know, learning about antibiotics can be difficult, so if you are looking to learn more about antibiotics, please check out www.learnantibiotics.com and the Learn Antibiotics book, available on Amazon. These resources include cheat sheets, practice tests, games, and more, and they are being used by thousands of people worldwide and may be helpful for you or your colleagues. And these are some great resources by Dr. Timothy Gauthier, a very passionate pharmacist. Okay, so I'm going to try to be brief, and I often fail at that, but today's episode is also a little bit longer than most episodes. So let me tell you a little bit about the previous episode. If you haven't listened to it, definitely go ahead and do so. It was the start of a series where people from the lab and microbiology, they come to the podcast and they discuss their careers. You know, I ask them about challenges, things they have enjoyed. They talk about their first job. If they have changed positions, you know, they talk about that as well. They also give opinions on what could be improved either in the microbiology field or the laboratory field. And this first episode started with Christina Angelini and Nicholas Moore. And Christina Angelini, they're both medical laboratory scientists, and Christina is now an educator, and Nick is a lab director. And I truly enjoyed having them on and having that conversation, so I hope you enjoy it. So definitely check it out if you haven't already. Well, today's episode is the second episode in that series, where people come in from the field and talk about their careers, as I said. And just like the first episode, in this one, there's also two guests, and one of them you actually know. And this is Kelly Maddock, and she has been already in two episodes in the podcast. One was about veterinary medicine, and the other one about Pastorella. So, another great episode where I enjoy chatting with them about their careers and things like that. So, as I always say, great episode, very informative. So, let's go ahead and listen to it. Well, as always, I like to say that with this podcast, you know, I enjoy talking to people, meeting people, and, you know, I had a great suggestion about an episode where people in the microbiology field will come in and talk about their path and how did we get there, and you know, basically just what we have enjoyed, challenges, if we're working on something different. Anyway, talk about our careers. And today I did an episode already about this. And this is the second episode. I'm really looking forward to it. So with me, I have two guests. One of them has been a guest on the podcast before with two great episodes, one about Pastorella and the other one about veterinary microbiology. So I have Dr. Kelly Maddock. And then I have another guest, which her name is Jessica D'Angelo. And, you know, Jessica listens to the podcast, and I met her before. I met her briefly through ASM. We chatted a little bit. And she's an MLS like I am as well. Well, all three of us are actually MLS. And we're going to be discussing our careers, you know, the guests mainly, and then I'll chime in every now and then. So everyone, welcome to Let's Talk Micro. Okay, so let's go ahead and start with a quick quick introduction. And you know, I know, you know, Kelly, you've been a guest before, and we'll start with you. And so but maybe if you can tell them a little bit of what you do and anything else that you want to share with the audience.
Hi. Yeah, thanks for having me again. I'm Kelly Maddock. I am section head of the Microbiology and Biosafety Level 3 Laboratories at the North Dakota State University Veterinary Diagnostic Laboratory. I'm very active in the Clinical and Laboratory Standards Institute and still really try to keep my, I guess, keep a pulse on human medicine while still enjoying my role in veterinary medicine.
Okay. And how about you, Jessica?
Hey, so yeah, thanks for the invitation. I'm, like you said, I'm a avid listener and now a guest. And so my name is Jessica D'Angelo. I go by Jess. I'm a microbiology supervisor at a smallish community hospital in North County, San Diego. I've been really lucky in that I've been a medical lab scientist for about 8 years, and my whole career I've spent in clinical micro. I absolutely love it. I've recently got involved in more mentoring and advocacy through ASM, and yeah, I'm really passionate about the field and excited to be here.
Well, you know, very excited to have you. And now that you mentioned that, so typically when I'm doing research, if I'm doing posts, right, so I tend to Google the name of the guest, and you know, you get things like LinkedIn or shows their name and title, so I make sure that I copy everything correctly and I don't leave anything out. And I was researching you, and then your name pops in ASM. I'm like, oh, that's great. So now that you're talking about that. So yeah, so definitely good. And one of the questions that I'll be asking about is working in other areas of the lab, but we'll get into that. Okay. So Kelly, let's start with you. I mean, what led or inspired you to get into this field? Let it be, you know, since all three of us are MLS, medical laboratory scientists. So what inspired us to, you know, lab medicine and then microbiology?
Yeah, so I think my route is maybe not atypical for medical laboratory scientists, in that it was kind of windy and I didn't just go straight into that field. I see that, I think, fairly often. But I'd started out in dental hygiene and eventually pre-pharmacy, and then ended up browsing majors when my mom was advising me to pick something and stick with it, and came across the major, met with an advisor, and they shared a DVD. And I remember thinking it was so cool that you could have so many different roles. It had mentioned veterinary medicine, but I wasn't sure how you would do that. So signed up for, I guess, those courses and had transferred to a different university. And I guess the rest is history there. But as far as actually choosing microbiology specifically as what I love, part of it was lab professors at the university just noticing that I had interest in it and aptitude, and eventually being a teaching assistant for those labs. So I guess if you are in a teaching role, don't underestimate just how much your positive support and kind words can actually impact someone's interest and confidence in a field. And I guess my love of microbiology was further confirmed when I got into my internship and went through that process.
How about you, Jessica?
Yeah, so I have a very similar path to Kelly. I started out as a dietetics major in college and had my sophomore year crisis of, this is not what I thought it was going to be. You know, it's not what I want to do. And I, like Kelly, was browsing majors, and I found, you know, medical lab science. I was like, oh, I've taken a lot of these classes. Seems okay. My parents encouraged me. They're like, well, why don't you reach out to the program director, see what it's all about? So I did. And it was Dr. Anna Ciolo, and she was incredible at University of Delaware. She was like, immediately like, okay, let's have a meeting. I'm going to come and tour you around the department. And University of Delaware is fabulous. I can't say more good things. They have like instrumentation. They have microscans right in the lab space, which is incredible. I was toured around, and at the end of the tour, she basically told me, she's like, okay, so you're going to register for this class. It's called Careers in Medical Lab Science. And then you're going to put in your application, and you're going to change your major. And I was like, okay, here we go. So that's how I got into the field, and I've never looked back. It's been incredible.
Yeah, right. It's definitely a great field, and your story, and you know, it happens. And you know, we talk about things like MLS and awareness, and you know, a lot of times people start, you know, in a different path, and then they find their way in, and you know, because either you didn't know of it, or as you start going, and some people actually, you know, as I mentioned before, they find it before they already have a degree, and then they go back to school, and it's also a very common occurrence. So I guess in this group, I'm the only one that actually went to school with the intention of being an MLS, but that's because, you know, I guess I was an MLT before, so So that was my story. And then I just decided, okay, I want to get a bachelor's in this. So I applied and went through the whole process for that. So let's talk about your first job in the field. And let's start with Kelly. What was your first job?
So basically, at a certain point in my education, I started wondering if I could actually handle phlebotomy or blood. I was not a big fan. And so immersion therapy, I guess, at 20, I decided I would try to become a phlebotomist. So I started out with working at a hospital. I drew blood at nursing homes and in clinics, hospital, then the ER shift. So dabbled a little bit in all of those. And then soon after starting that, I got a weekend job in the microbiology lab doing culture setups to help out the techs and kind of alleviate some of that workload. And those were really great intros into learning what is required for the blood, so you have more appreciation of that in the lab, and of course making sure that I could handle that part of the process, and of course getting my toes into the setups and processing in micro was a really valuable foundation that really benefited me.
Well, phlebotomy, huh? That's like, yeah, that's something that either people are, right, the fear of needles, and sometimes some people don't look forward to that, and some hospitals, when they're maybe like in a smaller setting, you know, the techs, they draw blood as well. So that's something that I did. And it takes a special kind of patience. And because definitely you're dealing with patients, you know, you have that face-to-face interaction. And some are nice, but if you're learning and then some get frustrated if you miss, and they might give you a little bit of attitude. And then you have to just remain professional and say, okay, no problem. I'll get you someone else. Or it was definitely an experience. And I have to say, you know, I have a lot of respect for all the phlebotomists out there, and I just, it's not for me. So what about you, Jessica? What was your first job?
Yeah, so I'd like to say I agree with you guys, and phlebotomy is really hard and really challenging. And thank you to all of our phlebotomists who do amazing work and are incredible. So my first job in the field was, again, I'll go back to my story. So I took this class, the first class I ever had in medical lab science, and it was careers in medical lab science. And the class was, it basically outlined everything you could do with the degree. And part of the class, they were talking about being a lab assistant. And I was like, oh, that sounds like that's something I could do in college. Seems good. So I had my first meeting with my MLS advisor. And I told her, I was like, I've heard that there's this job called lab assistant. Do you know of anyone that could get me in? And she was like, oh yeah, absolutely. She's like, I have another student I'm advising and he's graduating. Why don't I give you his contact? And I contacted him and I said, I hear you're a lab assistant. Can you contact me? Can you put me in contact with your boss? And then so I reached out to the lab supervisor at a small children's hospital in Delaware. I said, I'm interested in a job. Are you hiring? And they basically said, yeah, sure, come for an interview. And so that didn't work out. That would have actually been in the micro lab every other weekend. That didn't work out. But, you know, it was good to talk to people and get in. And an opening on the evening shift came up. And then so I interviewed and I took that job doing every other weekend on PM shift as a lab assistant while I was in college. And it was a really great experience because I got to kind of see all parts of the lab. I also took on projects with the microbiology supervisor, and I was able to work full time over the summer and kind of do a little more and kind of learn what I liked, what I didn't like. And I really fell in love with microbiology there. And the supervisor was really involved and really passionate, and that kind of sparked my interest. And it's also an amazing job if you're in college. A lot better than working at Starbucks, I would say. And I had a lot of people around me to help with homework and who were willing and really kind.
Yeah, you know, going to, now that you mentioned Starbucks, I think, excuse me. So if, you know, I really love coffee. So, and I think that if being a barista, I will be able to pay my bills that way, like the way that I am able to afford things now, like I will jump on it. It seems like a very cool job, but I definitely understand what you're saying. And it is a great way to start getting into the department and knowing people, and they know how you work, and they're already, you go in as a lab assistant and they're looking at you as a potential, right? As a potential employee, but you're doing an MedTech program. So once you graduate, more than likely they will hire you unless there aren't any openings, but there's a very common transition. where you stay there. And a lot of people are my classmates, and I see a year in and year out. I do feel bad sometimes, you know, for the evening shift, because it's such a revolving door of people coming in. You get your students going to college. Typically, a new MLS, you know, wants to get into the department. Sometimes they hire them in second shift. And then as life happens, right? So you get married or you start working on a family, and then people start going to day shift once there's openings. So you always have this constant turnover and very few employees that stay their careers. I mean, I get it. It's also a tough shift. It's not very compatible sometimes, you know, with life, because you either, right, you get into work, and after you're done, it's time to sleep, wake up, and then. So it kind of, depending on what your life balance is, it changes, you know, it upsets it a little bit. But once again, you know, a great way to get into the lab. Okay. So I guess, you know, so with you, Kelly, as an MLS, well, I guess in your case, have you worked in an area outside of microbiology, but you also have a very, you know, different experience, because you, in your case, you have worked in human medicine and now you work in veterinary medicine. So let's start with your, A, if you have worked in another area outside of microbiology as an MLS, and B, maybe talk about your experience, you know, working in human medicine lab versus veterinary medicine.
Yeah. So in the human lab, of course, you go through your internship, you get all those experiences in those different departments. But right after I was hired, they didn't have microbiology positions open, or at least not full-time ones. So they had per diems available, and then also in molecular diagnostics. So for the first year and a half, I rotated between those departments before becoming full-time microbiology. And that was where my passion was. But the skills in molecular, of course, are really valuable. They enhance your aseptic technique and just make you more cognizant of that whole process. In veterinary medicine, I was originally hired for molecular, so that actually qualified me for that job, which worked out really well. Of course, I pined after microbiology the entire time that I wasn't doing that, but it, of course, with the skill set that we have for medical laboratory science, I was able to pretty much dabble in most of the departments at our laboratory. So molecular, microbiology, I can do the rabies fluorescent antibody, which we consider a virology department test. I did end up getting trained in histology, so I can do that portion of the labs and some basic stains, and then sequencing. And it's still, to me, I guess, a different department, but within the laboratory, I got involved with our laboratory information management system, and so helping to build that. Of course, we're a small lab, so there's little projects like that all the time, which was really valuable just to understand the limitations and how much effort goes into it and potential problems you can run into. Really, I get to dabble, and I absolutely love that. I think that's kind of the story of my career, is getting to kind of follow what my interests and passions are, and I've been lucky in that.
Perfect. And yeah, we all have different trajectories, and it definitely makes you well-rounded and getting a better understanding of all the areas. But then some people also, they know what they want right off the bat, or they're like, okay, I want to do a micro, and they're fortunately enough that, you know, to get a job, especially sometimes it doesn't happen. When I, like I talked before about one of the things that we look like in micro, right? It's the plate reading. And so you want to do first shift, and sometimes that might not be a possibility. It certainly wasn't when I graduated. The department was full of techs, you know, very seasoned techs. So I could only get in on third shift. And then on the other hand, even if I had been able to, one thing that I had to consider back then, it's improved a lot, but it was the compensation. There was a huge difference between first shift and third shift. You know, you had those differentials and things like that. So you had to make cuts. So even when I moved to first shift for the first time, I had to keep a job on the side to kind of be able to do things like, you know, like travel that I enjoy. And it was still a good job, you know, to pay bills and stuff like that. But if you wanted that little extra, it was, you know, I needed that second job. Okay. So Jessica, you said that you've been in microbiology as an MLS your whole career. Okay, so in this case, you know, maybe have you been in different labs? And then in your case, maybe you can talk about that experience, what it's been like.
Yeah. So I'll just say that I was trained as a generalist. I was able to rotate through hematology, chemistry, transfusion medicine, obviously microbiology. So I do have that foundational training. If I ever needed to go back, and if people are thinking about the field, I would definitely say train as a generalist. you just never know. And getting that licensure as a generalist is very beneficial. As far as where I've worked, I've had the pleasure of working at smaller places, medium-sized places, and huge, huge places. I've done a lot of bacteriology, but it's really what I enjoy the most. And, you know, doing bacteriology, antimicrobial susceptibility testing. So I'm pretty specialized. I think Kelly maybe is a little broader than me, but
yeah, you know, I'm with you there. I enjoy it a lot, and you know, and I try to tell this to my students, and that feeling, and I've done a lot of bacteriology too, and I do remember, because you know, I was in a place where in second shift you read urines, but there's like a little bit of difference, and some hospitals do that, but during first, you have all the access to like all the experience, and you have your manager, your director. So I think that the learning curve is, you know, it's so much wider, and you can get your questions answered right away, see the effect of, okay, I'm working this, this is it, rather than having the communication from email or things like that. So, but wow, you know, it's such a great feeling. And when you start reading those plates, and I remember, I mentioned this in the other episode, but I work in a huge place and it was so compartmentalized. So they start you in urines. And the great prize, you know, the crown was wounds. It's like, yeah, you know, I can see all the non-fermenters combined with enterobacterales and actinomyces and rapid growers. And it was, oh my goodness, it was such a great feeling when I finally got there. So I definitely enjoy bacteriology as well. And I think that, you know, from me, and I mentioned this sometimes, I have worked in other areas, but it's just, you know, I gravitate back towards micro and I'm staying here. And but there's also something about, I don't know, it's just like the combination of the mystery. And at the same time, internally, I don't know, there's like a confidence that I don't feel that when I'm in hematology, in chemistry. I have like a tiny knot in my stomach when I go in. And when I'm in micro, it's gone. I think I feel like I'm performing at my best, you know, I'm the best MLS when I'm in micro. So, and I love that feeling, and I'm planning on sticking to that for a while. So,
did you ever work? Like, were you ever full time in a different department?
Yes, I was twice in my career. I was due to some, like, you know, personal reasons, and like I met my spouse in the same department. So I went to the general, the core lab, and believe me, I was very sad, and I made that decision because I wasn't sure. I was afraid to ask. You know, there was a possibility, maybe being in different shifts and things like that. I just didn't ask. I just moved away. And I think I did 332 days before I came back to micro. I couldn't take it anymore. I asked the director, hey, you know, my wife works in micro. Can I be in micro too? And she's like, well, as long as you don't work in the same shift, it's okay. So there was an opening, I interviewed, and I was right back in. And then I did in 2020, I went to this other job that didn't work out. And so I felt like maybe I burned a little bridge with my old department. And so I just came back to the same company, but doing core lab. I lasted 10 months, and then I went back to micro. Okay, so in the case of both of you, right now you're holding different positions, you know. So Kelly, you started in human medicine. Now you're in veterinary medicine. Now you're like, you know, you went, you know, you continue progressing in your career. So tell us a little bit about your current position that you're working right now and what led you there.
Yeah, I think I mentioned this on the veterinary microbiology episode that we had done. But I was essentially led to working at the veterinary diagnostic lab because I was getting to the point of being burnt out in my role and wasn't finding the things that spark passion. I still like the microbiology, but weekends and evening shifts to help cover, and then you're always short-staffed. That gets really tiring after a while. I think we'd all probably agree with that if you've experienced that. So that was part of why I looked for other options. But like I mentioned in my path to vet or to MLS, seeing that there was an opportunity to work in veterinary medicine was always something in the back of my head. So I had a chance meeting with a veterinary microbiologist working at the NDSU Vet Lab at a BSL 3 training. And she mentioned that there might be job openings in the next year and they would love to hire more MLSs because they had some that have worked at the laboratory for a long time and knew that we were highly trained and great skills. So then I pretty much stalked the job board for almost a year before a position opened up and applied. The rest was history there. It's been a really excellent shift. And like I'd mentioned, I worked as a molecular microbiologist, mostly in molecular diagnostics. But just through interests and having supervisors that maybe recognized I needed to be constantly challenged and always be busy allowed me to try other things in different departments. And eventually, of course, we lost our veterinary microbiologist and they needed someone filling in the section head role in microbiology and with the expertise to oversee those. And so I essentially worked my way into that role. And of course have the biosafety level 3 lab with that job duty also. So kind of a twisty way to that, but a lot of it is just continuing to do what I enjoy and also having supervisors that recognize abilities and interests.
Yeah, you know, I'll unfortunate side of the MLS and those shifts that sometimes, you know, we get that and then the hospital life can be definitely very challenging with the hours, the holidays, the shifts and not being able to stay in, it's an 8-hour shift, you know, quote unquote, and you're staying there 10 hours because no one can read your plates after you. You have to follow up with your work. So definitely a lot of things there. And for you, Jessica, I know that as a supervisor, and I don't know how your lab functions, but, you know, one point in time, you know, like I was a supervisor for a little bit, and then I kind of jokingly say that, right? So my career has gone a little bit like Benjamin Button. So I'm going backwards and I'm a senior tech now. So it's just some choices, but hey, you know, that's another story. But for me, it's just a lot of people, when I was just working on the bench as a regular MLS, I enjoy the challenge of saying, okay, I don't know what this is. Let me pull my books. Let me find out. Let me Google. Let me get some things. I'm ruling some things out. And that whole process was wonderful. And then by the time I go to my manager or my director or whatever, I have all these things. So I have a story and I'm like, okay, this bug, I'm not being able to ID it. I'm getting this. So I did this testing. I suspect that maybe I have this. And then that person with their expertise, they will fill in the blanks and help me out. Now, there's a little bit, I don't know, maybe because we're so busy, but there's a lot of bad practices where the moment that you don't understand something, you go to your supervisor right away. It's like, okay, hey, how do I do this? How do I do that? Oh, have you looked at this? Oh, no, I haven't. So being a supervisor can be definitely very challenging and you kind of lose. You know, when I was just a regular tech, I felt like I had like an invisibility cloak on. And then once I'm a supervisor, everyone sees me. You cannot work on the bench without being stopped for 30, 40 questions. So you know, what led you to be a supervisor? You know, what happened? You know, what's the story?
Yeah. So the story is I was also maybe a little bit burnt out. I was working at a really, really large academic medical center that I really enjoyed the job. It wasn't like I left on bad terms or anything. It's an incredible place. I learned so much, but I was in a leadership role as a lead tech and I was overseeing like one specific area. And at that point in time, there was a lot of COVID testing. So it was just a lot of COVID testing. I realized I wanted to like kind of have that broader impact in maybe a smaller setting. So that's what kind of led me to look for opportunities being a microbiology supervisor. And I actually moved cross country for the job. So it's something that, you know, I kind of took a leap and it's something I wanted to do, wanted to try. And when I got the interview for where I am, I was flown out there. I loved it. The person I was taking over for had spent her whole career there. She'd been there for 30 years. Literally all of the techs had been there for 30 years. She just set up this gorgeous offsite lab. And I kind of talked to my partner. I was like, this is an incredible opportunity. Like, I cannot let this go. I need to take it. Like, the next person who gets offered this is going to take it in a heartbeat because this is a wonderful place. And I've really enjoyed my time. I love like looking at the big picture. And like you said, Luis, like being that person where people have something and they're like, I don't know what to do with it. And I'm like, I got you. I'll help you out. And a lot of times it's just kind of like getting them to think and kind of guiding them. It's not like I'm going to answer all the questions. That's kind of something that I love to just kind of like showing my techs, like they know what to do and they're capable and they're confident. And I'm here for moral support, but you don't need me. You know everything you need to know, or you know where to find it. And I think that's what makes a good supervisor, in my opinion. And yeah, that's what led me to my role.
I agree. And not only that, I think you're doing great and with that approach. And I wish that more people will do that, actually, because it's just, right? It's like you're telling me, like the way I see it also, it's like, yeah, I'm not, you know, I am not a genius. I'm not anything. Yeah, I mean, I guess I have some smarts or whatnot, and I find myself that I'm good at what I do, but I could easily get through my work, you know, about 98%, you know, unassisted. And it's just by reading, by looking at things and thinking. It's like, okay, you're telling me that a room full of microbiologists, you know, we cannot solve this and we need a supervisor, which a lot of times, you know, sometimes the way that promotions go, and sometimes it's a person that even has very little experience, because it happens. So it's like, but I guess the warm feeling of asking a supervisor and feeling that you're covered. But I love your approach. You know, it's right. It's like, yeah, we have the skills. We can do this. So let's go ahead.
I'll add to that and say that when I came into my current role, I was the youngest person in the whole. So you could definitely be the youngest person and be able to be a leader. It's not about knowing everything. It's about, you know, inspiring your team and leading in a productive way and understanding your team too and what kind of things that they need.
Yeah, no, and this profession, and it takes a long time, and you know, you can be, it's all about, yeah, just your knowledge you build in over the years, and you know, it comes from a place where you do a lot of repetition. You educate yourself, you know, what your resources are, you ask questions, and you do all these things. So, but, you know, it sounds like you're doing a great job. So keep it up. Man, we need more supervisors like that. Okay. So let's start with, so Kelly, in your career, you know, you mentioned some of the challenges that, you know, you had, and you talk a little bit about burnout. And so the question is, you know, what have you enjoyed throughout, and if you have any other challenges, you know, I'll ask that as well.
Yeah, definitely for things I enjoy, regardless of whether it's in human or veterinary medicine, is you're always impacting a patient. In veterinary medicine, I like to think I'm helping at least two living beings or two beings, because we quite frankly get a fair number of necropsies. So we're trying to figure out why an animal died, but you're also helping potentially a herd. And even if the person is an animal producer, meaning they take care of the animals for meat or some other kind of a product, they care about that animal. So, and of course, a companion animal, you care about your dog or a cat in your house or all the other little scaly potential buddies that you could have in your house. So I think that's a really great benefit of just being in this role, is you get to help someone or something. I always love the interaction with other health professionals, whether that's other medical laboratory scientists or physicians, in my case, referring veterinarians or pharmacologists. There's so many areas that you can interface with other professionals. And then I love that there's always opportunities to learn. Like you mentioned, pulling out resources. I mean, behind me, I've got a little library. I absolutely love my textbooks and the little resources and being able to continually learn. So self-study, I think, is a really awesome tool. But of course, more formal education, being able to go on with master's or doctorate, and then just any other little continuing education. So if you're a lifelong learner, I feel like microbiology or medical lab science is kind of an awesome field for it. Always something you can dabble in. Challenges, like I said, I mean, the burnout. I do feel like there's a little bit of the chip on the shoulder as being kind of the unheard, unseen professional that's working. So I've personally had to overcome some of that and really try to make sure the laboratory has a voice and that our voice matters, because we do make a big impact on patient care.
And you, Jessica? What have you enjoyed and some challenges as well?
Yeah, so I'm going to echo a lot of what Kelly said, but with the human side, I've never had the opportunity to work on the veterinary side. But yeah, definitely that. Yeah, the impactfulness of the work is definitely number one. I feel like I go to work every day and I'm making a difference and I'm not stressed out because I have to deal with patients directly. I think being behind the scenes is definitely the role for me. I think I love like new diagnostic technology. I think that I've been in the field about 10 years and the progress that I've seen since then has just been incredible. So I think that there's so much innovation happening in microbiology that's just amazing. And I can't wait to see what the next 10, 20 years will look like. I think also being a part of an infectious disease community is amazing. I love working with my ID pharmacists and my ID clinicians. I think they're amazing people. And, you know, just collaborating with them, if they have something challenging, like, and they're picking up the phone, calling me, and, you know, we're kind of figuring things out. I love doing that. And I also love networking. I think that microbiologists are the nicest people. And we all have like a passion in common and everyone really wants to help everyone. So it's just been amazing being in the community and reaching out to people and people are just so willing to help you and to collaborate with you. And you said challenges next. Okay. I'm also going to echo what Kelly said. I feel like we all kind of feel underrecognized and unseen as clinical lab scientists. So, yeah, just like kind of outside people not knowing what we do. I've had to, you know, you have to kind of explain a lot your practices and why you do certain things. And, you know, maybe some people don't understand. It's like, well, I want to bring that test in. It's like, oh, no, wait, here we go. We got to do this is like bringing people step by step of kind of like what you do and why validation verification is important, why you do quality control and the amount of training it takes to get a lab scientist into the lab. I don't think people understand. I would also say staffing shortages. I'm really well staffed right now, so I will like knock on wood. But I would just say in general, finding and retaining really skilled microbiologists can be tough. I think the workforce, at least what I've experienced, is there's a lot of retirement happening right now. So I think that we're losing a lot of talent, which is really sad, but I'm happy for everyone leaving the field. I think everyone leaves when it's their time. And as far as me personally, I think sometimes it's kind of hard balancing the technical, administrative, and leadership responsibilities that come with the role of being a lab supervisor in a smaller place while still staying hands-on and doing what I want to do. So sometimes it could just be a lot.
Yeah, definitely can. And not only, like you said, you know, you have all these things that you have to keep up with and you know, comes competency time and you have that thing, you know, training and, you know, the schedule, which can be a headache sometimes, you know, it's like how many people I need here. And I have all this, you know, PTO requests and, you know, which ones do I approve, who has asked before. So you have, there's a lot of things to juggle. I mean, I agree. And I like what you said about the, you know, the feel and all the changes. So I started, I've been about 12 years now as an MLS and a lot of changes, and I got to see a little bit of the pre-MALDI tough days and work with that. And it's definitely so exciting from going through that, from doing APIs and doing all those tests. And now, you know, like we're doing gene sequencing in my lab. So it's definitely very wonderful where now you can find out what the organism is and the ID and not wait to send it out. And so a lot of great things, you know, definitely agree with that. You know, we mentioned that we are underrepresented and we have those challenges. You know, we have staffing issues. Whether it's in MLS or, you know, like in lab or in microbiology, what can we improve? And I'll start with you, Kelly.
Yeah, I think we were a little bit kind of touching on this, but I think it's just trying to make ourselves more visible. And how do we do that? I mean, we're introverts. And like you mentioned, you know, maybe you're in the lab because you want to help people without actually interacting with people because it might exhaust you emotionally a little bit. But it's something that we really want to do. But I guess what I do in my role is I really try to interact with veterinarians a lot more and be more public facing there, just to be like, hey, we exist and we have a profession and we care about those patients as much as you do. I really think, though, far earlier than that, it's getting to kids and letting them know that even this is a career path and just making it more commonplace. And then finding, I'm still struggling to find it, but a way to talk to people that aren't in the laboratory or aren't necessarily technical. How do you explain to them what you do so that they're aware of it? But I think that awareness is just a continual problem that we have. So however we can solve that.
You know, on the previous episode, there was the talk about perhaps, you know, joining like professional organizations and advocating and things like that. And it is true that we want awareness. And then I think we also kind of have to do our part and get out there. And we see a lot of improvement, people going to schools, you know, colleges, high school, and bringing things. And that's something that it's definitely encouraged, you know, joining an organization. And, you know, you mentioned introvert, you know, talk about challenges, right? So it's just, you know, that's definitely has been mine, and I say this many times, but it's just as being someone so quiet, you know, I have to constantly sell myself. You know, like I put myself out there because I tend to fall on the backside because I'm quiet. So it's just, it's something, you know, it's just people don't realize the extent of when you're an introvert and the difficulties that you have to getting out there and you know, sometimes just me like doing this, you know, it drains me completely. Because normally I am a quiet person, so it takes a lot of time and effort and just coming out of that shell and facing those fears. So, okay, and what about you, Jessica? What do you think could be improved in this field?
Again, I would echo what you and Kelly said. And I'd just like to say, you know, Luis, you're doing an amazing job. Like, this podcast is such great advocacy, and it's a great resource to just share with people who might not know what we do. So thank you for doing that. But like I said, advocacy is a tough one. I think, like Kelly said, I think, you know, we got to get to people sooner. I think high school is probably where we should be focusing. And I've tried to do that. We have something through my hospital where high schoolers come in and I kind of try to talk to them about like, hey, would you ever consider this? And so doing things like that. And I think that's even a priority for ASM. They're sending representatives to I think like high school counseling conferences to try to like kind of get in a little bit earlier. I think maybe something that we didn't talk about is fair wages and like pay equity. I think nursing does a really good job advocating for pay equity. And I think we could do maybe like a little bit better with that as medical lab scientists. I've successfully lobbied for pay raises, which has been awesome, but it's really hard, and it's easier if you're in a pay transparency state. But I think it's going to be, it's a problem. I think also better integration of microbiology into patient care teams. So it's like you don't want certain committees like making decisions about what the lab is going to do without a lab representative. So having someone that wants to be on those committees and be vocal is really important. I'll stop there.
Yeah, no, the wages is, it's definitely a thing, and I've seen that, you know, we get this market adjustments sometimes and this improvement, and it has changed a little bit, but there's still a lot of ground to cover on that. And I do remember, you know, because this was many years ago, and I can, you know, and I can say, remember as an MLS, you know, the first time it was $20 an hour, basically that was it. And you imagine, and then it progressed very slowly. And we get the situation sometimes when you've been working in a lab for 10 years and then in the same lab, and then someone, right, has 10 years of experience, but they've been working in another lab, and then they join yours and they, you know, they're compensated more. So that's a situation that maybe it shouldn't happen. And you know, because of the whole Benjamin Button that I mentioned, and I did a series of moves, you know, I guess it worked out in my way because, you know, it increased, but not everyone goes through that situation. So professional organizations, I like hearing about ASM, and I mentioned this before. I think that sometimes maybe ASM could do a little bit more towards, I don't know, appealing towards the medical lab scientists. I think that, which I'm fortunate because I'm able to do this podcast, and they do podcasts and things like that, but they're very tailored for like PhDs and things like that. So that's why, you know, I'm like, okay, no, just talk simple. You know, let's just break things down. There's a huge force that we're doing a lot of microbiology and we're not PhDs. So maybe that could work a little bit more on that. Okay, so if anyone was asking you about a career in microbiology or as a medical lab scientist, what would you tell them, Kelly?
Because we're affiliated with a university, I do get to interact with students and I love it. I love trying to show passion to another generation and just the things that they can do outside of it. But I always tell them to consider a career in medical laboratory scientists or science, especially if they're in a microbiology major, just because, yes, you can get all sorts of great microbiology jobs, but if you want a job in almost any location you could imagine, having that MLS will actually get you that job and get you closer to getting to do real hands-on microbiology with patient impact. Of course, you don't have to have that drive in the microbiology field to do it, but to me, that is a really stable option to be able to pursue that. And you end up with those really great controlled skills that would be great for research or whatever you ended up applying it to. It's a really great jumping off point for a lot of options. And as far as some other advice, and we've just now touched on this, is joining a professional organization. When I graduated, I was so frustrated. Of course, you're looking at paying loans, and then it's like, wow, I'm supposed to pay money for my license and for these professional organizations, and what are they doing for me? Now, as a more of a grown-up tech, I definitely see the value of that networking and camaraderie. I've joined ASM. I'm a part of the American Association of Veterinary Laboratory Diagnosticians for the vet side, but just having that camaraderie and it actually seeing the advocacy and work has been really important to me. So I would definitely advocate, especially for young techs, is to find an organization and just start to get involved or at least see the value that they're putting forth with that. So those would be my two big bits of advice there.
I'm definitely a fan of networking, as I stated many times. And going back to first, you know, Jessica, thank you for your words earlier. I was going to tell you, and then I got involved in saying something else, but I appreciate it. You know, it is a great feeling. And when you bump into someone like I did with you and you're like, hey, you know, I listened to your podcast, and I don't know, it's amazing that it makes a difference, right? You know, I do this, you know, I enjoy the nerdiness, what I'm doing for the profession. And that's the icing on the cake when someone says, hey, you know, this helped me, or hey, I listen and I enjoy it. So thank you for listening. And yeah, with also from what you said, with a lot of wonderful people in this field, and they're always willing to talk and help each other and share information. That's why, like through this medium, you know, I saw one day searching for things and I saw a post that Kelly put on LinkedIn and okay, you know, this looks like veterinary medicine. So let me send an email immediately. Hey, let's do something. And here we are, you know, we've done a couple of episodes. So a lot of people are that wonderful and they're like, okay, hey, you know, just, yeah, I'll help you out. And you know, some people sometimes might say no, very few have said no, but it's typically because of scheduling issues or they can't right now, but a lot of wonderful people in this field. So Jessica, you know, if someone was looking at you for advice and asking you questions, you know, what would you tell them for a career in micro or the lab?
Yeah, so I would tell them to get experience in the clinical lab as early as they can. You know, volunteer if you can. I know a lot of places take volunteers. Do an internship. I know some places will do like an internship, shadow even. Just reach out to people and say like, hey, I think I might be interested in this. Would you be willing to let me shadow even for a couple of hours or talk to me? I think people are really receptive to that, and that's really undervalued. I think also kind of finding mentors who can help guide your career path. I think mentorship is a lot hands-off than people think. Like, I have mentors where it's like I've been following someone's career path and they don't even know who I am, but they have mentored me from afar. So I just think like finding people who you aspire to be in their position and following them. And also like if you have specific questions, like like, how did you jump from bench tech to supervisor? It's like, that's a very specific question. Or if I was going to reach out to you, Luis, I'd be like, oh, how did you get into podcasting? Can you tell me about your first podcast experience? Like, if you're looking for a mentor, kind of try to be specific and show that what they are doing would be directly applicable to you. And also, like you guys both said, get involved in professional organizations. Even as a student, I think student memberships are a lot cheaper than when you're graduated. So take advantage of that cheaper pricing. Go to local conferences. I know ASM is incredible and CLSI is also incredible. My Southern California branch is very well attended, and our October meeting is a great place to connect with potential employers and people who would be willing to talk to people about microbiology.
Yeah, and you know, for those listening out there, and I don't know, maybe if one of the issues too, like, you know, I love the conferences, and maybe there was a way that sometimes maybe some of the costs will be kept down. I mean, more people will be able, because I know sometimes, and I mentioned this on my lab, like, we put a lot of asterisks out there and then they get accepted, but then people are like, oh, if no one is paying for it, I cannot go. And that's the reality between registration and travel. It's, you know, it's definitely sometimes, you know, $1,200, $1,500. So it can be challenging. So that might be keeping some people out. I know that typically facilities, you know, they will send like your director or a manager, supervisor, but for the other people. So I don't know, I would love to hear at some point in time, you know, what's the formula behind the prices. So if anyone's listening out there and they want to be a guest on the podcast, you know, doors open. So please reach out. I would love to pick your brain and get a better understanding of what is going on. Okay, so of course, you know, we're microbiologists here. So, and we have that sometimes, you know, we have that organism that we love, either because it has like a novel mechanism, or it has something interesting. It can be visually, it can be smell, it can be anything, any number of factors. So I guess, you know, now I'm going to ask you first, Jessica, what is your favorite bug?
I would say that my favorite bug is Neisseria gonorrhea. I just think it's always really fun when you find it. And everything you learn about it in school, it just like doesn't. It's like, no, thank you. And you'll see it I've seen it in cerebral spinal fluid. I've seen it in joints. I feel like a lot of people I've talked to, it's like throughout your career, you'll find it in the weirdest places. I've seen it in shoulders. And the way it's gotten more and more resistant, it's a really fun bug. And I think I know what your two, what Luis and Kelly's favorite bugs are, because I just listened to your last podcast, Kelly. So I think I know.
Yeah, my favorite bug is well documented now. Pastorella multocida, of course, because it is just the best bacteria. Mostly because it can impact any animal species. But of course, there's the joy of just how it looks. It's got a smell to it. Of course, we're not purposely sniffing plates, but everything about Pastorella multocida, I think, is really great.
Yeah, same here. And you know, we have talked about it, and you know, Kelly had the episode and I did 1 year ago. It's definitely a very interesting organism, and I enjoy working with it. And I enjoyed the episode with Kelly because she, you know, brought like so much better looking at things from her point of view. It added so much to that. But for me, if you go into like those basic, you know, skills, and it keeps you thinking about, it doesn't grow media, so don't assume things, you know, biochemical. So it sense, it really keeps, makes you work on your skills. So I do like that. And as I mentioned before, and I love multocida, and that feeling, you know, that when I found that Pastorella aerogenes, you know, I tell my students, and whoa, you know, like it's growing on Mac. Wow. Like it was just that nerdiness. Well, it's like, well, wait a minute, you know, you see it in pig bites, and let me check the history, and there it was in Orlando, right? The pig bite. So I definitely, yeah, it's an organism, you know, that's an interesting one. No one said Neisseria gonorrhea before. So, right. That one keeps us on our toes, and those diplococci, you know, they scare us in the lab a little bit, especially when we're learning and we're training, want to make sure we don't miss them. Of course, you know, it's kind of when you have a sputum, then you see the diplococci and you're like, okay, it's fine. You know, it's part of like an NPN or something like that. So, but yeah, Those are great answers. And I going back to something, you know, I like something that you mentioned before we started then, how sometimes, you know, small the world is. And you know, I invited you both to the podcast and you have met before, but it was because of this, because Jessica had listened to an episode and then we were both at a professional meeting and you reach out. So that goes to say, you know, if you don't be afraid to ask questions, don't be afraid to, if you attend these meetings and you see something, you know, approach the speaker, you know, talk, you know, get an email, if you see it, email them. So don't be afraid, just, you know, ask your questions, meet with people, network, advocate. Well, you know, as the episode is coming to an end, is there anything else that you want to add? And we'll start with you, Kelly.
Something I didn't mention too, for someone getting into the career field, is just to identify what you like to do and then ask for more of that thing. I think as a supervisor, that is one of my favorite things to do, is find what gives people joy in the lab and then letting them do more of that thing. It's, you know, it's adding to the mission of the laboratory, it's supporting patient care, but they actually also love what they're doing. And I think that is probably the thing that served me most in my career, is getting to find the thing that sparks joy and then doing more of it. So makes you a productive and more well-rounded worker, I think. But yeah.
Yeah, that is definitely true. And sometimes and this has gonna happen on large facilities where training moves a little bit slower sometimes, depending, and people do, yeah. They want to do more and they're not able to, and sometimes people get tired of that, and unfortunately they move on to another position and we lose them, and it's very unfortunate, because, you know, they have good skills and because of timing issues and things like that, kind of move fast enough. And what about you, Jessica? Anything else to add?
Yeah, I would just say that if you want to be successful in clinical microbiology, you should be nice to everyone. Louise, we could make a triangle with where we all live, but we all know each other. And, you know, you're literally only one person away from knowing someone. So if you get into clinical micro, there's a good chance that, you know, you'll move across the country, but those people will still remember you. So I would just say, be nice to everyone, leave a good impression wherever you go. And going back to what you said, Luis, it's like, if you see something and someone's doing some incredible work, like I saw with Kelly, I was like, oh, that was really cool. Like, tell someone that they're doing cool work. And, you know, you just never know. Maybe you could be doing that work and, you know, you just don't know.
Yeah, definitely be curious, and whether, like, it can be the work they're doing or how they get that job. You know, as we talked about, how do you become a supervisor? If you see them, okay, you have a background, you know, you're an MLS, so how do you jump to, you know, infection preventionist, or what was that path and what do you do? Yeah, get curious. Don't get afraid to be out there and ask questions. I mean, the worst thing that they can do is say no, or, but overall, a lot of nice people. And I like to emphasize that, because sometimes, unfortunately, many factors and we get some toxicity in the lab and we get some difficult personalities. And, you know, we're in that narrow environment, but there's so many people out there that are so nice. And so I agree with that. Try to be nice and with people. You know, it doesn't cost you anything. So, well, you know, what can I say? You know, this is, you know, I was looking forward to this and such a great episode. So I appreciate, you know, you both coming here and taking the time to be in Let's Talk Micro.
Thanks for having us.
My pleasure. And that, my dear audience, is the end of this episode. I hope you enjoyed this episode with Kelly and Jess. As always, I enjoy sharing this information with you. I think this is a great series where people from the field, you know, they get to share their stories, their journey, and maybe they can inspire people. You know, we provide feedback and what could be improved, you know, in lab medicine, in microbiology. It is great. So these episodes are going to continue throughout the podcast, and I hope you enjoy them. As always, thank you for the support. Stay tuned. Great things coming your way. So, as always, first, continue bringing that passion to what you do. It's so important. You do such great work. So, as always, stay motivated, stay safe, and of course, continue talking macro. Until the next time. Bye.